meeting will come to order. A quorum is present. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of February 18th?
I'll move the minutes.
Representative Huntley moves the minutes of February 18th. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, the first bill is House File 3066, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 3066 be recommended to pass and referred to State Government Operations.
Okay, Representative Thiessen moves that House File 3066 be recommended to pass, referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations, Technology, and Reform. Okay, Representative Thiessen, do you want to introduce your bill?
Sure. Thank you, Ms. Madam Chair. This bill is the result of, derives out of a report that the Department of Health issued in March 2009 about the methodologies by which administrative expenses are really allocated among different lines of businesses by HMOs, insurance companies, county-based purchasing. And really the gist of the bill is to try to get some uniform methodologies in place so we can actually compare different insurance companies with apples-to-apples comparisons. And so what it does is it takes the recommendations of that report, which was actually done by Deloitte, which kind of recommended in terms of administrative expenses that as far as possible you allocate them to the lines of businesses they're attached to, so either commercial or public specific public programs. And beyond that, because it's very difficult to do that for some expenses, we have a advisory group set up to figure out the best methodologies beyond that and set up those rules. And then it does something similar, setting some rules about how investment income is allocated. And that's really what the bill does. And I do have a testifier.
Okay. We have Buddy Robinson.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, welcome to the committee. And please identify yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thanks.
You might want to just pull the mic a little bit
good
closer.
Idea.
Great.
Very good. My name is Buddy Robinson. I'm co-coordinator of the Greater Minnesota Healthcare Coalition, which represents over 3,000 people in eastern and central Minnesota. We have over 30 years of involvement in state healthcare legislation. I'm also the staff director of the Minnesota Citizens Federation Northeast, based in Duluth. We support HF 3066. It will improve the state's accountability over the finances of the low-income health programs that are contracted out to managed care entities, primarily private HMOs. It adds to the measures passed in 2008, stemming from the February 2008 Office of Legislative Auditor Report, which GMHCC helped put into motion on the financial management of these programs. That report revealed that the agencies which monitor these programs, namely Departments of Health, Human Services, and Commerce, were not doing any independent verification of the administrative expenses of the private HMOs for these programs. Some legislators held a mistaken idea that the OLA report confirmed that the HMOs have low administrative expenses, while in fact the report merely presented what the HMOs claim in their own financial reports to the state. HF 3066 makes additional improvements by mandating reporting templates to make sure that administrative costs as well as investment income are accurately assigned to different product lines, and most important, it will establish standards and procedures for examining the reasonableness of administrative expenses.
Excuse me one second, Mr. Robinson. If you could just, I'm afraid I made you super sensitive about the microphone.
Too close.
There you go. Just
try
talk
again.
Normally. That's
sorry
great.
About that.
Thank you.
It also sets up an advisory group on administrative expenses, which will heighten the transparency that is long, long overdue. Here are four reasons why you should care about this. Number one, in order to examine the reasonableness of administrative expenses, you need to have clear definitions of what does and doesn't constitute those expenses, and you need to be sure that all of these expenses are being truthfully reported and that none are being hidden in the medical expense category. Number two, for example, If you were to read the Attorney General's compliance review audit of Medica's administrative expenses in 2000, you would see that adding in the non-reported items to what was reported increased the administrative percentage from 9% to 19%. Number three, that same report has an alarming example of an unreasonable expense. It found that Medica's subcontract to United Healthcare for administrative services was done on a no-bid basis at a highly inflated rate. It would behoove the state to know if this arrangement is still going on, because that is a violation of the HMO statutes. It would also mean that United Health is profiting handsomely off of Minnesota's nonprofit HMO business, including the state's public programs. And number four, the question of HMO profits also bears scrutiny. DHS wrote a report last year to the legislature in which it claimed that the low-income health programs lost money in 2006 and 2007. However, that report excluded MSHO, Minnesota Senior Health Options. When you add MSHO in, it turns out that the private HMOs had profits for those years, not losses. So we urge your support for HR 3066. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Here's a copy.
Okay, I understand that there's an amendment. Is Representative Abler
here? I'm here, Madam.
Oh, there you are.
Do you want that now?
Yeah. Sure, if you want to.
Yeah, whatever time you like. Madam Chair, I can move the A1 amendments, and I do have a witness.
Okay.
Who will take just a few minutes.
All right. Representative Abler moves the A1 amendment.
And I'd rather, we'll vote later on it. So just if they could take the testimony, and then we'll do whatever we do after that, if that's okay with the.
Okay,
and
sure.
So I'll just have a little setup, and then my witness could come. Mr. Finewax wants to come down.
Okay. We've got David Finewax.
And let me just offer a comment first, Madam Chair,
sure.
And he can do his thing, and then that'll. It's a time to redesign things. Topic of taxing more, cutting more, that I'm really getting tired of that whole dialogue. I think the answer is to grow and redesign, grow jobs, grow our economy, and redesign everything. Part of that has to do with some of the state vendors that we use. Mr. Obama today has a front page article on limit rates of insurers. And so, and the same theme is that, to get the most money we can out of all of our, that's in today's Tribune. There's a proposal here which I'd like the committee to listen to, and with that I'll turn it over to my witness.
Okay, thank you, Representative Abler. Okay, Mr. Finewax, welcome to the committee. Just introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Finewax. I'm general counsel for the Minnesota Hospital Association, and I'm here today in that capacity because in that capacity I've been working with the Minnesota Provider Coalition, which is a group of other providers consisting of the East and West Metro Medical Societies, the podiatrists, the chiropractors, the dentists, the alternative medicine practitioners. And we have been researching and working on a proposal for almost a year, which we had intended to have as a standalone kind of effort. But when Representative Thiessen introduced House File 3066, we thought it might be timely to at least come here and discuss it. And I would be remiss if I didn't commend Representative Thiessen for the concept and bringing some attention to it, because we think it's a critically important problem. And now, it's really more important than ever. And we're talking, of course, about administrative expense and accountability and transparency. Everybody talks about accountability and transparency. It's universally favored. And we believe that it's really important that the legislature do something to operationalize these concepts. Let me tell you what this amendment would do. It does three or four things, basically. First of all, let me preface what it does with this comment. We are not seeking to regulate the business of insurance. Let me repeat that. We are not looking to regulate the business of insurance. We are asking you, as the legislature and the fiscal agents of the state of Minnesota, in purchasing health services for certain populations, your employees, the Medicaid population, through the use of the PMAP mechanism, we are asking you as a purchaser to leverage your purchasing power and to make certain demands, if you will, to ask for things and require things and ask people to stretch and extend their capabilities to care for the populations that we're all concerned about. Having said that, let me tell you some of the things we're asking you to request, in if your good judgment so dictates. Number one, there's been a great deal of discussion about administrative expense. How do you define it? What is it? Who knows? Everybody who's opposed to the current system thinks it's too much. Certainly the witness who preceded me made that argument cogently. Personally, I don't disagree with that argument. I am suggesting to you that as purchasers, an easy way to attack this is to say, we're going to define what's appropriate. If we give somebody who is a vendor to the state of Minnesota, a prepaid health plan, whoever, someone who operates for us in the PMAP arena or other vendor or broker of services, we're simply going to tell you, here's the deal. We're going to give you a dollar. Your obligation is to spend 90 cents of that dollar on patient care, on care for the entitled populations, on the people of the state that we are trying to care for with these programs. The other 10 cents, you keep. Now, we have a second level of problem here. We don't use the same accounting system. You, as the legislature and the IRS and the revenue department and the whole rest of the world, uses the generally accepted principles of accounting. Insurance entities don't use that. They use something called NAIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners Accounting. The reason I mention this is our proposal also suggests that when you act as purchasers, which you have every entitlement to do, you say if you are a vendor to the state of Minnesota, you will use the same accounting system the state of Minnesota uses, the one we use to prepare our fiscal notes, the one we use to collect our taxes, the one everybody understands, the generally accepted principles of accounting. So that when we talk about what administrative expense is, we have the same definitions, we have the same rules, and if we want to look at it and figure out who's spending what, we can figure it out. So, one, you're going to spend 90% on the people out of every dollar. Two, you're going to use the generally accepted principles of accounting. Three, we are suggesting, and this is a novel idea in this setting, but not a novel idea in the world of business, that you create for healthcare providers who serve these entitled populations and these state employees a private right of audit. So if they believe that the ratios established for expenditures on care, since they're the ones providing the care, if they're not being appropriately met, that they have the ability to audit at their expense whether or not the 90% is going where the 90% needs to go. Now, you will find provisions like this in commercial leases. In real estate leases, it happens all the time when there's administrative expenses. The landlord spends money on the administration of the property, and the tenants, who ultimately bear the cost, have the right to look at those records and see if they're picking up their fair share of the tab, or if they're being assessed too much, or if things are out of whack. So this is not some, you know, totally new concept. It's a common concept in business. We're suggesting it be given to providers here, and the way providers would exercise it, because obviously it would be an expensive endeavor, is that they would band together, and I imagine groups of providers or association of providers, if they felt aggrieved, would conduct such an audit at their expense. If they ended up with a result showing that the standard had been violated, they could recover the cost of the audit from the entity being audited. If not, they eat the cost of the audit. Why is this important to the legislature? It gives you a policing mechanism, an enforcement mechanism, that doesn't cost the state of Minnesota a dime. We will look over the shoulders to make sure that things are on the up and up and being kept honest. And you are the recipient of the benefit, because if our audit discloses that more money was taken than should be taken, this measure requires that money to be forfeited to the healthcare access fund. We don't even want it back. We want it to go into the pool to care for the people who should have received the benefit of the money in the first place. So this proposal contains a private right of audit. It contains, and it also contains provisions that say, you know, plans can't discriminate and kick you out of your network because you exercise that right, and you can't waive that right. But it basically establishes a ratio concept, but again, not for the business of insurance. Insurance policies that are sold are not subject to this ratio, if you will. private policies, the business of insurance, that's a separate thing. That's for the Commerce Department. We are asking you as purchasers to leverage your purchasing power. And here is an intriguing concept that goes along with that request. And particularly from the hospital community, we've been doing this for the last 2 weeks internally. I'll explain that comment a little more. We think that the state should use that purchasing power to say to these folks, you know, we won't take every single vendor. If you want to do business with us, what else are you willing to throw in? Kind of like going to Best Buy and when you buy the big screen TV saying, will you throw in a DVD player too? Because more often than not, they will. So what if we went to some of these folks and said, you want to do business with the state? Here's the problem. We're cutting loose a whole bunch of people from GAMC. How many of them will you pick up in your proposal to us to be a PMAP vendor? What will you do to shoulder your share of the burden? How will you be accountable? What will you throw in to sweeten the deal? They're not required to do anything, but you would be required at least to ask the question of them. And then in evaluating the proposals, you could say, oh, Entity A is willing to take, you know, 400 people from every one of Minnesota's counties and put them in this kind of thing and absorb the expense, you know. That certainly is a good deal. That's a start. Now, the reason I bring this up is for the last several weeks, I can tell you, back where I work, the Minnesota Hospital Association, we have been struggling with formulas and algorithms to save GAMC and who can absorb which cut and what cut. And, you know, I have sat in boardrooms full of people, you know, swearing at each other and throwing coffee cups, but at the end of the day, they all concluded that we can't cut these people loose and something has to be done. Well, something has to be done. And if we look at the amount of administrative expense, we would respectfully submit that the legislature has an obligation to know where the money is going. Right now, and it may be somewhat of an oversimplification, but it isn't that much. You're basically busting off a giant hunk of the state budget, giving it to every vendor who steps up to the counter and say, go in peace, hope it works out. There needs to be a little more oversight than that. You need to leverage that huge amount of money you're spending to provide benefits for people who are being cast adrift in these difficult economic times. We wish we had more time to work on this concept, and we want to thank Representative Thiessen because we are using his bill as a catalyst, at least today, to get the idea out there and present it for your consideration because I don't, given the crisis that we're facing, we don't have a lot more time to waste. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question, Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair. Maybe I'm pathetic. Thank you for the time for this. This is, I think, a very provocative idea, and you'd see how provocative it was if there were more witnesses. But I think that as we look to redesign and rescue the people that we care about, we have to look at every possibility. Madam Chair, I appreciate the time. I'd like to withdraw the amendment now, having given it the airing. If that's okay,
I don't know if there's a witness that would like.
Representative Abler, there's a witness who'd like to speak to it on the other side, and I think we should give her an opportunity before you withdraw.
I'm just concerned about the time. So
sure,
thanks.
There we go.
Not everybody's so enthusiastic about it. So,
welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this mic okay?
Yes, you're right. Just fine.
My name is Julie Bruner. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. And I'd like to talk about the amendment, not about the underlying principles that Representative Thiessen talked about in the bill. I think some of the things that I heard from Mr. Feinwachs are really going to be addressed. Some of these things you sort of have to go through incrementally to gather information to figure out where you're going to go. So I think the original bill begins to look at some of those things. Our members include five HMOs that provide health care coverage to more than 410,000 Minnesotans throughout Minnesota's public health programs. I found out about this amendment late yesterday, and so I apologize. I haven't had a lot of chance to really analyze the impact on the members, but I do understand that the group that has been meeting for some time and working on it didn't let us know what was going on. So I feel like I'm a little short on maybe some of the facts that you'll be interested in. First of all, we're always willing to sit down with the hospitals, the chiropractors, the physical therapists, and we do frequently medical association to talk about issues, and we would be happy to continue a conversation with folks about the issue, regardless of whether the author moves the amendment or withdraws the amendment. But this amendment is drafted has some serious problems. The amendment would violate several federal laws, CMS rules, and contractual requirements the health department, the health plans, and county-based purchasing have with the Department of Human Services. For example, although DHS determines health plan rates for government programs, the rates must be established within the boundaries of CMS requirements related to actuarial soundness. CMS prohibits a state from paying plans too much or too little. As written, we believe that this amendment would be in conflict with federal law because it requires plans to meet a 90% medical loss ratio, but it uses a definition that would result in rates not being actuarially sound. The reason is that it requires health plans to count as their administrative costs the portion of payment to providers that is used as administrative expense on the provider's end. So, for example, this would mean that hospital food service, cleaning crews, ground crews, administrative staff would be calculated as health plan administrative expenses. Health plans couldn't account for these costs because the providers don't publicly report them in a way that the health plans report. So it doesn't fit together. It doesn't make sense from that perspective. The language appears to set the stage for possible antitrust by allowing providers to know how much other providers are being paid. I can't think of another industry where a business is allowed to see all of its competitors' data. Individual health plans contract with more than 30,000 providers. This amendment would require health plans to produce a personalized statement for each provider. This one provision would dramatically increase administrative costs during a time when every one of our organizations is working to reduce administrative expenses and are subject to administrative cost caps. Health plans in this state are already highly regulated, undergoing 12 different audits and reviews from organizations such as the Department of Commerce, Department of Health, independent professional auditors, and the National Quality Assurance Commission, and others, and I have a list of those audits with me. These regulatory and oversight functions are conducted by independent auditors and state and federal regulators, not by individual organizations who have a financial interest because of their business relationship with health plans. During the 2008 legislative session, the legislature passed a law that limits or caps what health plans can spend on administrative costs for state public programs. That cap is 6.6% of revenue, or 8.1% when you add in premium taxes and provider surcharges that the plans pay to the state. The amendment requirement that the reporting of administrative expenses comply with generally accepted accounting principles, GAAP, makes sense on its face. But it's not workable. The state does not allow health plans to use GAAP accounting measures. Instead, statutory accounting principles are used because it is the standard reporting system established by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners for use between insurers and regulators. And this is nationally. Finally, but most important, this bill does nothing to control costs. In fact, it'll increase costs. There are serious problems in the health care system today, and they relate to the amount of care that's used and the cost of the care that is consumed. There's plenty of blame to go around. Health plans are highly visible whipping posts for health care problems right now, but the problems in the health care system go far beyond the existence and the operation of HMOs in Minnesota. This amendment is not going to help solve the problems in the healthcare system. Given all the other problems facing our state, quite frankly, I'm disappointed that the committee has been asked to spend its time looking at a proposal like this. There are a lot of things that we need to be doing, including the general assistance medical care issue that you heard Mr. Feinwach so eloquently talk about. We stand ready to meet with the hospitals, any of the provider groups, to talk more about this issue and have an opportunity to work together before this concept would go any further.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Abler, you want to withdraw your amendment at this point?
Just a comment, and I do not intend to engage the witness in a debate. This was meant to air an idea, which I think has some merit, and I hope in the dialogues that continue after this meeting that those ideas can be fleshed out. And okay. Do you want another witness?
All right.
I don't know how many witnesses you want.
Mr. Lehman, did you want to testify to the amendment
yes.
or to the bill?
To the amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And I'm here this afternoon on behalf of Itasca Care, Prime West, and South Country Health Alliance, the three county-based purchasing organizations in the state, that unlike Ms. Bruner's members are publicly owned. They're county-owned governments, about 30 rural counties that would be affected by this. And I'll be very brief. Unlike Ms. Bruner, who got this late last night, I see it was printed out at 10:01. I was watching the ice dancing, so I'm glad that no one called me at 10:01 to tell me about it because I wouldn't want to turn that off.
And
I just learned about this.
You didn't
this
state your name. Could you just state your
Tom
name?
Tom Lehman, Madam Chair. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
On behalf of the three county-based purchasing organizations. I'll be very brief. Mr. Feinwalk talked about the importance of transparency. I'd just like to remind everyone, all the county-based purchasing organizations as entities of local government control are transparent. Our board meetings are public. Our records are public. What we do is public. We are completely transparent. I'm frankly surprised that Mr. Feinwalks has been working on this for a year and hasn't called me. Most people would not accuse me of being shy and retiring and quiet. So, David, I'm in the book. If you want to talk about this, please let me know. Other comment I'll make is that if you look at page 3 of the amendment, Madam Chair and members, talks about rights to audit related to the loss ratio. Mr. Feinwalks said that this provision won't cost the state a dime. That may be true, but I think it would cost 30 local counties a lot of dimes if they have to provide all records, all invoices, all receipts, all other data necessary to every provider they contract with. So, again, we're concerned about the amendment. We appreciate Mr. Abler, Representative Abler, pulling it. Look forward to working with him and talking with him, and hopefully we can resolve this in a way that's acceptable to everyone. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lehman. And I just wanted to say also, Representative Abler, following on Ms. Bruner's comment, that I'm not disappointed that we're hearing the ideas. I think it's very legitimate for us to hear it, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. And with that,
Madam Chair, we're approaching desperate times. We have to be very creative. And so with all respect to the plans and the people in the audience, it's with respect I offer this. Suspect that I withdraw it, and we'll work on it yet.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Representative Abler withdraws the amendment. Representative Thiessen, do you have a closing comment for us before we vote on your bill?
I do, briefly. And that is, I think that what this half an hour of discussion has been about is really trying to bring more transparency and more uniformity so we understand better as decision makers what decisions we're making. And I think 3066 moves us in that direction. So we're comparing apples to apples. I did, before the hearing, talk to Representative Abler and others interested in the amendment. And if more work is done and discussion had and they think they've come up with something that is really workable on all sides, because I think there are challenges with the way the amendment's drafted, that we would hold a hearing and vote on the bill as a standalone bill. But I would like to move ahead with 3066 on its own because I think it's cleaner the way it is.
Okay, we have a question from Representative Lane.
Yes.
Thank you. Going back to some of my notes from the OLA report in 08, I'm thinking of two areas of concern having to do with how they allocate things across the different lines and how they code things as medical expenses as opposed to administrative expenses. Two different areas. Does this accomplish both or just one?
Representative Thiessen.
Madam Chair, I think this just gets at how they allocate administrative expenses and investment income across the lines. There was a piece of this report that was more general, but it wasn't going to the other issue, the Department of Health report, or Human Health, yes. But the ideas weren't as fleshed out. And so it only deals really with the administrative expenses and investment income as it relates to how we allocate those across different lines. So, okay. And, you know, we can work on the other, but this bill doesn't do it.
Okay, and that was just my comment that both parts are important because it's important if the health plans have lower administrative costs and higher medical costs, they get their capitation rate set on their medical costs, so there's an incentive to get them higher. And I just throw in another comment regarding the actuarial soundness that was mentioned, where this amendment talked about generally accepted principles of accounting, and straight from the OLA report is talking about how the inflationary nature of actuarial soundness built right into it, that in fact it is provides incentives for managed care organizations to increase their costs to maximize their future revenues, or rather prefers incentive for a captivated industry. It's actually another area that we need to look at. There's many areas here, but I'm glad we're at least addressing one.
Okay, thank you. Since there are no other questions, Representative Thiessen renews his motion that House File 3066 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations, Technology, and Reform. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Bly, if you would want to come up.
Representative Lane.
Yes, I would like to pull this bill from the table and have it re-referred to finance so that we can recommend that it be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? That motion prevails. And before we start, I wanted to recognize, thank you everybody for being in the room. You know, we're going to want to try to keep the discussion, you know, among the legislators as if we can. But I also want to recognize all the nurses in the room. It's Nurses Day at the Hill, and thank you for coming down here and participating in all of that, in this process. It's really important. So, Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. I do have a technical amendment that the researcher brought to my attention that we need to pass in order to bring the bill in its proper form, and that primarily has to do with the changing of dates that need to be readjusted. So I'd like to have that moved. So
Mr.
That we
Chair,
could
I'll move that amendment.
Representative Lane moves that the A1 amendment to be adopted. Any discussion to that? Okay. All in favor of that amendment say aye.
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 All opposed? That motion prevails. And just one other word of kind of overview. You know, we had a long hearing on this bill last year and had extensive public testimony, so we are going to just be talking about the bill, kind of working through it, answering questions among legislators to the author, and that's kind of the plan for the day. So, Representative Black.
I'd just like to make a few remarks.
Yes, please do.
Just to explain to why I'm here before you with the Minnesota Health Plan, and we, myself and the advocates who bring this bill, believe that this is a real solution to our health care problems. It's obvious there's need for reform even greater than before when we brought this bill. There's growing grassroots and legislative support for the Minnesota Health Plan, and that's very heartening. Looking at the complexity and difficulty of reform at the federal level in a climate of corporate influence and political gamesmanship makes it clear a straightforward and simple approach is necessary, and we believe the Minnesota Health Plan is such an approach. Some would argue we don't really have a healthcare system in our country, but we believe that it, at very best, it's so complex, it's difficult to understand how to figure out how to make improvements. And we believe, again, that the Minnesota Health Plan would provide a much easier way of reforming our system. There's a lot of talk recently about system redesign. I think the Minnesota Health Plan delivers a redesign of our system that's positive and will make real improvements in our healthcare system. I want to say it does not create a government-run healthcare system, as some critics have said, but assures that more of our hard-earned dollars go to healthcare and preserves our current system of health providers. If we're serious about affordability, about access, about instituting real reforms, we believe that the Minnesota Health Plan is a solution that must be considered. We also, it's our view that good health care is not a commodity, but it's a public good, and the Minnesota Health Plan would establish that. It's the only plan I know of that meets the test of the 9 principles that we state as necessary reforms for creating a healthcare system that we need. And among those, I would say allowing patients to choose their own providers, holding down costs through prevention, efficiency, and reduction of bureaucracy. It also focuses on preventive care and early intervention to improve health of all Minnesotan residents and reduce costs from untreated illnesses and diseases, to provide adequate and timely payments to providers, and to continue to Minnesota's leadership in medical education, training, research, and technology. And those are principles I think you have copies of, and that's also included in the bill. So without further ado, I'll take any questions or comments. If it's possible, if I could call upon somebody help answer a question, I'd like the freedom to do that.
Yes, absolutely. Representative Garter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Representative Bly. Just because we have so many other things going on, I didn't have an amendment or anything, but you and I have talked about Article 6, Section 5 on the Regional Health Planning Board. That's page 19, and its composition. So the regional boards are made up of county commissioners. Each county decides what commissioner goes, and then of that region of county commissioners, they pick someone on that board. And I guess if this isn't the kind of detail that we'll quibble over here, but as you move forward, I would hope you might consider an alternative where you'd have could be a gubernatorial appointment by region with confirmation by the Senate, something like that, where the legislature is looking at things as a whole, as opposed to the what's in here. But that's just my comment.
I would certainly be willing to consider that and look at that and talk that over with the Senate author of the bill and see if there's some way we could accommodate that. I'd want to talk with you a little bit more about your reasoning about why you think that would work better, but certainly we could consider that.
Okay. Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to start off, I appreciate the attention to the last amendment that I brought forward. I understand that's controversial, and there's some nuggets to be drawn from there. I think this in front of us is it's kind of the same sort of a thing. I don't have a big long discussion about this. We could talk about this for 4 hours, and I could have 14 amendments, and I don't know that would be productive. I do have some questions just about the author described some of the elements of it. If this would go to forward, I have as grave a concern as the witness has had about my amendment, only they're graver. Can't imagine this thing actually working. My architect draw a stairway for one of the buildings that I was remodeling into a school, and the carpenter built it different. And I said, you didn't draw it the way the picture was. He says, you can draw anything you want. That doesn't mean you can build it. And the author I know has extreme good intent in this, and I've talked to many people on both sides of the issue, and I don't like to debate just to hear myself talk. So I won't be voting yes today, but it's with respect that I'll not be voting yes. And if this were going to work, it would need tremendous amounts of work. But for the sake of the discussion, could you please tell me, Representative Bly, how you plan? Tell me how the money works on this. And just your general money part of the talk. So what do you think the admin will cost? How much more than standard money we're going to have to put into this thing to make it work? And that kind of, just a couple minutes on that, if you wouldn't mind.
Representative Black.
A lot of those financial questions have not been worked out. And to be very frank, they need to be before you would actually implement such a plan. So I welcome the question. We are looking for paying for the plan by itself with premiums that would be based on an individual's ability to pay, and it would be subsidized by some taxes from businesses that would also benefit from having their employees have access to comprehensive health care. As far as the details about how all of the funding works with implementing the program, I'm not prepared to describe all of those details, but would be happy to entertain any suggestions you might have.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abel.
I guess that was kind of my point, but do you have an idea? I have a we're colleagues here. We have come from different backgrounds. I've spent my whole career working in the field that you're going to attempt to improve upon. And when you have add certain features in, like you can go anywhere you want to see anybody you want whenever you want, that costs money more than the standard. Maybe you'll save money because people won't die, or they'll be healthier, you hope. But I think the plans would come down, the same ones that liked my amendment so well, would come and tell you that every time you add in those freedom elements, that it raises costs.
But I think one important...
You want to just comment on that?
Yeah, one important change would be people now who utilize the emergency room for their primary care would have other choices because they would have coverage that would be comprehensive. So I think that would be a huge step in changing, you know, why it's important to have people have access and not limit that access to certain providers. I mean, one of the things we hear constantly about in the talk about reform is we have to have choice for people. And I think actually this does provide a tremendous amount of choice for a patient or client looking to being served by a provider that they would like to be served by.
And Mr. Chair, well, just to remind you, the GAMC population we're talking about is something under 1% of the state, and some 60% have coverage through a private entity which covers clinics, and another 20 or so percent are covered in state-subsidized plans and Medicaid and Medicare. So anyway, so I'm just beware what you're trying to fix. If you're trying to go after 1%, then you're going to hammer to...
That was just one example. That was just one example.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you also, if you don't mind the dialogue, could you also discuss this board and the board and the decision-making power it's going to have and what it's going to decide to pay for and hitting the budget if it's over budget? Could you talk about that? Like the governing board.
Yes, I know what you meant.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the governing board would be charged with making a fair amount of decisions, but they would also be decisions that would there be recommendations made from the providers and the hospitals as to how this would take shape and how it would work. I think that there would be input from those folks who work in the health system to make sure that we get the most efficient and the best kind of service and billing and funding that we can have.
How many questions do you want? What administration level do you expect to be? Like what percent of administrative overhead do you expect you can attain?
System like this, either Medicare or the Canadian system, look at about 2% administrative costs. Some would argue it's a little more than that, but I think that's a fair number, 2 to 4%, something like that.
And this is an opinion question, but could you offer me why you think that the state-funded health plans have a hard time hitting 6% and 8.5% or 8.6 counting AMTRA, and you think you can do it for 2?
Well, a number of those plans do use the private sector to, deliver that kind of coverage. So, I mean, I think that's indicative of where you wouldn't be using that to cover people. So, I mean, I think that's one place where savings could come. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, I just want to commend the author for his faith, and I appreciate his heart on this and. This bill, where does this bill go next if it should leave the committee today?
Finance committee.
And it would go to health finance and that track and then a few other stops, I would bet. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had about four questions, about six questions ago after Representative Abler got through with his cross-examination. and I guess my comment is that it really kind of starts with what Representative Abler has to say, and I look at him as a mentor sometimes on these issues, is that I think this bill is a bill that we have to explore. I think this is a bill that might need some fleshing out in terms of its cost, but I think its day has come, and you've quite eloquently stated on numerous occasions that everything should be in play and that we should look at every single issue in every single way that we can reform. And so with that all being said, I did have some administrative cost questions that I think that you have, you know, answered or at least attempted to kind of, outline how we would save money. I guess with that being said, my my major statement is that I too feel like, especially as a first term member, that we are often talking about all of these issues in the context of how we've always talked about them before. And that if we are going to kind of get out of the crisis mode, and I agree with you, of saving GAMC, which is an important notion and an important population, and we're going to kind of get past that issue, I think the proposal that Representative Thiessen and even your amendment to talk about what do the health plans pay and can we figure that out without causing antitrust laws, to how hospitals can be reformed, and quite frankly, how do we figure out how to move healthcare forward, not just the financing of healthcare, but how do we make sure that we treat healthcare as a human right, and that it is not just simply something that we kind of push around and pass one way or the other. Even Representative Galtwell, who I'm surprised isn't here today, and even his plan that he continues to push forward, I think all these things should be on the table. So with that being said, I'm going to vote yes to move this forward so that we can continue to have this conversation. I think it is an important notion of single-payer health care to see how this might work in our system.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to kind of jump in a little bit on the whole question of administrative costs. I mean, first of all, it's nice that we heard Representative Thiessen's bill right before this, because I think there's some important overlap there, and that is, you know, what is administrative cost? I mean, to Representative Abler's question, I mean, you can, you know, it kind of depends on what you're counting in that bucket, right? But the other day in the Finance Committee, I asked Commissioner Ludeman what he thinks the cost drivers are in our healthcare programs. And the very first one he said was administrative complexity. Now, granted, that's probably not as big a cost driver as some of the others, namely growing enrollment and utilization and so on. But that was the very first thing he mentioned. And I think part of the answer to your question, Representative Abler, about where the savings comes in, is that with this plan, you'd have a lot less administrative complexity. You know, we spent an awful lot of time, as Representative Bly mentioned, you know, trying to figure out how to keep the GAMC program afloat. And, you know, and there was a lot of talk about why do we have so many plans. I mean, right now, under the current system, enormous amounts of resources are spent deciding who pays, what they pay for, who gets covered, are you eligible? I mean, in certainly in our public programs, but also in the private world, an enormous amount of our healthcare dollar doesn't go to healthcare at all. And I think that is where this kind of a plan really shows a lot of promise, to take those dollars and actually put them into providing care for people. So I commend Representative Bly for bringing this to us today, and I'm looking forward to voting for it.
Representative Lane.
Well, I'd like to join Representative Bly in making some comments about this. And I emphasize that in our healthcare non-system, our problem is that we do not have a good administrative system. We're talking about administrative costs, but that's another subject that I can speak to again. But there's health care that you get from your provider, and then there's health care administration, and that's the problem. We have a zillion insurance policies who all try to administer according to whatever, but we don't have a system that actually allows us within that system to then address cost containment. But first of all, if we have an administrative system that do it, we immediately hit cost containment around the administrative stuff. We don't have to worry about marketing. We don't have to worry about lobbying. We don't have to worry about underwriting of who are we going to cover, why, and when, and how much. And we're not going to be second-guessing doctors, and we're not going to be worrying about high salaries, and we're not going to be worrying about administrative complexity, whether there's actuarial proper use. We're not going to be worrying about what's an administrative cost and what's a medical cost. We're not going to have all these concerns. So right away, you save money on that. And we just have an actual administrative system so that you know what your plan covers, you know what it's going to be. You don't have to worry that when you go to the doctor today, tomorrow that will be called a pre-existing. You have a system in which we can start to address some of the other concerns around how we administer health care. And this particular plan says that everyone has access to all necessary care. You choose your own doctor based on ability to pay. And then we seek cost reductions through preventative care and early intervention, through efficient reporting and standard forms, through coordination of care, and all this administrative upfrontness that's built into the plan. I think that anybody who wanted to sit down and say, let's see, if I were to start from scratch and create a system that actually worked, you'd start with something that had a skeleton as sound as this, and then you'd begin to worry about what doctors might be incentivized in what way, because maybe you would actually begin to see that doctors were human beings who were there for a purpose of doing the best they could, instead of considering them as the bad guy who you've got to somehow contain from doing the wrong thing, or that people were actually there and actually looking for health in their life, and that, oh, we don't have to, that we're going to worry that they're going to go to the doctor too much. We'd get rid of some of these crazy things we've been talking about and realize that illness comes to all of us. Medicine is both an art and a science. The doctors are partners with us. Everybody does the best they can given the resources available to them. And bottom line, we're all in this together.
Representative Button.
Thank you, Chair Thiessen, and thank you, Representative Bly, for once again engaging this important discussion around health care reform. As you know, and others know, we very much share the goal of this initiative in terms of moving to universal health care for all Minnesotans and hopefully all people in the United States. And that's been the efforts for much of the work of this committee and the Health Care Finance Committee for the last several years that I and you have been part of this legislature. I just want to say, though, that a few comments about the proposal. There are many, as we know, many ways to tackle health care reform and to healthcare systems. We see that globally by looking across all industrialized countries and other countries around the world. There are multi-payer systems, single-payer systems, and a whole lot of variants in between in terms of how they work and function and also what kind of service delivery systems they have. We also know across both those categories, single-payer and multi-payer among our industrialized competitors, that many of them have close to half our per capita cost, per person cost of healthcare, and that's one of the things that is putting us as a global disadvantage, but also we're very concerned about the insufficient coverage we have of citizens in our country relative to many of those countries. Having said that, from looking at that information, though, we know that that countries in that group, also multi-payer countries that have hundreds of health care insurance plans, also in many instances have half our cost per person. And so in addition to the other information this committee is aware of in terms of what the health care trust drivers, the administrative issue is one component of it. And it's actually long-term and over time not the major component, in my view, of what's driving health care costs. So when I look at this proposal and consider it and where it's taking us, I feel that it has a partial diagnosis of the problem, and therefore it's a insufficient solution to the problem moving forward because it doesn't recognize the dynamic features. And what I mean is I do agree that if we were to immediately wipe away all the administrative costs associated with shifting to this new plan, which will be a challenge but doable, as soon as we do that, there'd be a one-time gain if there's this significant administrative cost difference. And I think there is an administrative cost savings to be had by a simpler, more straightforward, better organized from scratch system to deliver to administer health care, absolutely. But once that one-time gain is achieved, what happens dynamically over time? And that's where I think we get into discussion about what kind of system works best, multi-payer, single-payer, and what who sets up the incentives in the system for the providers and other groups to respond to and for the citizens to respond to. And in that area, I actually think that this proposal and this particular proposal, but also some generally in this area, actually do a worse job over time in terms of addressing those cost drivers potentially. And in particular, some of the things that Representative Abler alluded to as well, but I think this actually has embedded in it some significant exacerbations of some of those cost drivers. And so for that reason, I really think that we need to, come back to a discussion, all of this that share the goal of the universal health care coverage for all Minnesotans and everyone in the United States, to talk about what that is. And one of those things, even on the administrative side, nevertheless on the technology side or the delivery of medical care side that are cost drivers and the incentives that are set up in the system, is even on the issue of administrative things that Representative Lane just listed off that would go away under this, in my view, only about half of the things that she mentioned would go away under this. Because if we're still going to have a private provider system with this bill, we're still going to see a lot of marketing going on because you can go to any provider, and so they're all going to be buying for your dollars that you're going to bring with you. So there'd be a very heavy marketing campaign going directed at all of us as free agent consumers under this bill. So there's many features of administration that would still be within a different form, and also there's many features of marketing that would still continue with the system. But on the core issues, which I think are more important long-term drivers, I actually think there's some portions of this that are really problematic. So,
if I could
Representative Bly, absolutely.
I'm not so sure. I agree that there are one-time savings. I think that there are savings that would go on in just the administration portion of this. I also think that although I agree that there would still be marketing going on, there would be ways of looking at or controlling the healthcare dollars going to that kind of enterprise or that kind of expense, and various entities would have to work out, you know, how they manage to do that in different ways. I'm not so sure that I agree either that the other cost factors couldn't be addressed in this system. I think they could be, and I think in the establishment of a system that has some governance and has some way of looking at things, it's quite possible to consider and to look at various other cost savings or methods of payment or whatever it might be that you could consider. I don't think this precludes that you couldn't have those discussions or that they might not be part of going forward and looking at reform. So I guess I'm, you know, I don't share your view that that it's very focused and limited in what it could do. And I will also welcome the conversation going forward and sitting down with you to talk more about it and Representative Abler as well.
Representative Bunn.
Well, thank you, Representative Bly, and I look forward to continuing those conversations as well.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bly. I just have two questions for you. A common concern that comes up when talking about a single payer system is the idea of limited access to care, rationing, or wait times, and maybe that's something that whether you agree or don't agree, there is some compelling information out there, and as someone who has family in three different countries where there is a single-payer type system, I've seen that firsthand. However, it seems, again, whether or not that can be agreed upon, it seems as though you might be trying to address that in your bill or that concern in line 2.1. where it says that the Minnesota Health Plan must ensure an adequate number of qualified healthcare professionals and facilities to guarantee availability. And I am wondering what does this bill do, or how would that be ensured, especially if Minnesota moves forward on its own as one state, and doctors, providers have the opportunity to do more business outside of the state if it's not working out well here for them under a single-payer system. What does this bill do to ensure an adequate amount of access for the millions of people who would need it?
Representative Bly.
Well, I'm not sure that I could satisfy your question in great detail, but it is in the goals of this to make sure that we have incentives for doctors to move about in different places in the state, and also to find ways of helping doctors and nurses get training that they may need so that we have enough of them in the system. We are quite clear, I think, in that our premise is that we shouldn't be rationing health care, and that we want to make sure that people have access to the health care that we need, that they need. There may be some systems out in other countries where they perhaps don't fund adequately the system that they have, and for that reason have to do some rationing. I think that there's also, some would argue that there are some, in quality of care, that there are some things that you don't try to cover, for instance, but that's a decision that would have to be made by others who would take on how the system will work, how it will be implemented. Our plan doesn't call for making those kinds of decisions. Our system right now has a lot of rationing in it, and if you have the money to get health care, you can get it. If you don't have coverage that's adequate, you're limited in your ability to get health care. And so, you know, to think that we don't have rationing right now, I think, is an illusion.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that that answer, and I understand that there are access issues right now that we're trying to get through various ways. I'm still a little confused on what this would do. You mentioned incentives. I guess I would love if you had any ideas of what those incentives would look like, but I could take on if there's not an answer to that at this point. But my other question was, and then I'll be done, is how would providers be reimbursed through your bill? How would rates be set? Would that all be left up to this Minnesota Health Board? How would that be set? Salaries, things of that nature. I take it that would all be set by this board, and how would that be done?
Representative Black.
Well, where the board would have jurisdiction over those issues, they would be making decisions about rates, and they would take input from providers. But this isn't, this is not a government-run health system, so we wouldn't be deciding doctor salaries, or that's something that individual hospitals, or they would decide how to do that. Not all hospitals pay physicians by salary, so that's something that would have to be determined as we went along.
President Gottlieb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, Representative Bly, this is government-run health care, no doubt about it. You read this cover to cover, and you tell me how this is not government-run. This is government in charge of darn near everything. It's unbelievable. We face a $1.2 billion deficit this year, $5.4 billion next year. A conservative estimate when this came before us last year was that this was at least a $30 billion add-on to state government, and we have no way to pay for it. You've got a premium in place, I agree. But now what we've had this 2 years, and we still don't have a fiscal note on it, so nobody's ventured into making an official state-sponsored price tag on this. But this is extraordinary. In the countries where we have done this kind of thing, we get rationing of healthcare because it isn't the patient and the provider making decisions, it's the government. When you open up healthcare like this, what you do is you increase the number one cost driver, and that's utilization. And then the only way the government programs, the socialist programs, are able to control it is by cutting benefits.
We've been having a really good discussion, folks, so let's just keep it. Okay. Go ahead, Representative Gottwell.
When you open the floodgates like that, the only way you control is by either cutting benefits or cutting payment to providers. We already have some of those problems. This is not the way to go. And to bring it up at this point in this legislative session with no real way to transition to this, no real way to pay for it, I think is irresponsible, frankly. There's no way I could support this. I think there's a lot of great reform ideas out there. I think a lot of members on both sides of the aisle have them. But this is not it. And we don't see models around the world that suggest this is the way for us to go.
Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bly, for bringing this forward. Just a couple of comments. First of all, I want to echo what you said in response to Representative Mack's comments. We absolutely have rationing of health care right now. If you can't afford it, you don't get it. And that's increasingly the case. I represent southern Minnetonka and northern Eden Prairie, and I am hearing daily from constituents who are losing insurance. And we have research that shows that a lack of insurance can increase your risk of death by 40%. We need to pay attention. I have a lot of concerns with this bill. We've talked about some of them. Representative Bunn alluded to some as well, so I won't go into that. But I am supporting this bill. One of my disappointments with what happened on the federal level was that this discussion was not given the space that I think it deserved. I know that there are a lot of good people, a lot of bright people who are working on this issue. A lot of them are providers. They're healthcare workers. They're nurses. They're nurse midwives. They're physicians. And I think it's important that we listen to them. And so I just want to, I will be happy to continue working with you. I have heard from many patients in my district who want me to support this. It's not a perfect plan, but we, in working together, I think we'll hopefully someday arrive there. We need to, because I think it's an illusion to think that if you have insurance today that you're going to have it tomorrow. Thank you.
please. All right. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would respond a little to the how we have physicians everywhere that we need them, and then something to the costs. And the healthcare board has the ability, because it's based regionally around the state, to address the need, the disparity of providers here and there, and to make sure that perhaps there's forgiveness of educational costs or a greater reimbursement incentive to practice in the outstate areas where there might be less. So there's ways in which, and we actually do some of that now to get providers out in some of the areas by looking at helping them with educational costs. So these kind of things are obvious ways in which we can assist with that problem. And as for the cost, there is an upfront cost into setting this up. However, once it's set up, it takes the costs that are out there that we're aware of and the costs that are out there that we're not even aware of and puts them all in front of us and addresses them, and actually the overall cost that it impacts everyone is actually less. And isn't that why we actually set up GAMC in the first place? Because how these people were getting their care was the more expensive way after they were more sick, ending up in the emergency room, and we said we can address some of these things, Minnesota Care, GAMC, we can address some of these things more efficiently and hence better with better cost, lower costs and better outcomes for the people. And what we're looking at is the costs lowering to all of us, the overall cost of health care. The Lewin Group had done a check of four different programs possibly considered in Colorado. All of them have different parameters as to how many people get covered and how much it would cost their state. Only their single-payer type program covered everybody, because that's what it means. And it actually had a cost savings of $1.4 billion to the state.
Representative Torres.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We talked just a little bit now about access to providers. I come from a rural area of Minnesota, and we've had a great challenge trying to attract providers to our hospitals and clinics in rural Minnesota, and I really don't see in this bill how you're going to address that problem. Could you flesh that out a little bit?
Representative Black.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Torkelson. Representative Lane addressed it in a little bit. I mean, some of the tools that we might have available would be to lower the education costs that some, or forgive some of the education costs that doctors moving into those areas might go. There are some loan forgiveness already in effect, I think, in some areas where, in order to attract them into those harder to attract areas, you might be able to do that. There may be some other incentives that I'm unaware of that people in a certain region might be aware of that could attract a physician or a doctor. One of the things that I think is happening, that I hear from physicians, is that with the complexity of the system we have today and all of the various plans they have to deal with, medicine is a much more difficult job than it used to be and doesn't have to be. And so if we could simplify a lot of the administration and a lot of the things that go on, it might be easier for doctors to be thinking about moving into areas where they might be the sole provider in a certain area, or they might have less administrative issues to deal with. So I can't give you a real specific answer into all of the things that might happen, but there are some, I think.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just along those same lines, you know, many of these issues you've already presented are in place now and really not working all that well. I also notice in the bill that you're going to allow open access to specialists. Now we know that at our medical schools, we are training a high percentage of specialists and a low percentage of family practice doctors. What in your bill would help overcome this issue?
Well, I think...
President Black.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think you raise a very important issue, and I'm not sure if we have addressed it specifically in our bill, but it is something that I know that we're concerned about, and would charge the board with trying to figure out how to make a change in that. But again, I think some of it has to do with what the job of a general practitioner physician is like, and how can you make that less onerous and something that would be more attractive. But I think it's something that, as whether we have this plan or not, is something that we need to address. And I think that this might provide at least an avenue to talk about that and come up with some plans for how to address it in a much easier way than we have right now.
And let's remember, it's not just doctors that can fulfill that role. So, Representative Kelly. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Representative Rood made the comment that we've got to listen. And I think one of the traps we fall into as representatives is we end up in echo chambers, and we have this bubble over in St. Paul, and we listen to people who think alike and talk alike and show up and support our ideas. And what I'm curious about is as we look outward and we see even a latest poll as of December of 2009, a Rasmussen poll saying that 62% of the people oppose a single-payer health care system. And arguably, you can look at the election in Massachusetts. I don't think that was a partisan vote. I think it was a vote against a national health care system. So I think that we've got to be careful. I think we've got a great example in the work that Representative Murphy did in the GAMC program. And we had great debate, and I think we're very, very close on fixing a problem. And it's something that everyone can buy into. And I think that's very, very important when we talk about major reform in a healthcare system. I think the general public has to have buy-in, and they have to have faith that what we come up with is something that they want as well. So I guess maybe my point here is that where do we feel the support for a single-payer healthcare system is coming from if we see those figures like that?
Representative Bly. Okay. Thanks. Representative Bly.
Chair Thiessen and Representative Kelly, thank you for the question. I think you have to be careful which surveys you look at and also how the questions are asked. And when the question is asked in a way where people are informed about what a single-payer system would be like and how it would benefit them, they're overwhelmingly in favor of it. I think what people react to is what they saw in Washington with the complexity of the reform and the however many page bill that they saw and the gamesmanship that was going on, which is very different than the plan that I'm bringing before you, and also very different than, I mean, single payer was not given a chance to be talked about in the federal debate. So, and to your question, to your comment about the Massachusetts election, I really don't think that had to do with a single-payer system. I think in many ways it had to do with frustration over what they saw happening with the process of trying to come up with some kind of federal health care reform. And, it was very messy. It was very messy.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you. And Representative Bly, that's a fantastic point, because my final, opposition to this bill is that we've asked for there's so many questions and pertinent questions, whether it's administrative costs or rationing or how providers will be reimbursed, that we've asked these questions of, and there has been no concrete answers, and so vague that it just seems to me this is a great debate, it's a great start, but this bill is in no form to move forward. And I think it's great that you're working on it as well as everybody did, but I just think that this bill is just not ready to go. But I appreciate your work, definitely. Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bly, I want to thank you and Senator Marty for your perseverance. A lot of people give up, and you didn't give up. I'm going to vote for your bill today, but not without some reservations. I was thinking about that Pottery Barn rule, although it's not really official rule. You know, you break it and you own it. And so there are parts of the healthcare system that I think we would alter and do something different with it. I'm not saying the outcome wouldn't be better, but, that change and disruption, I think, is always on people's minds. But one of the reasons that I'm going to support you today is just since I've been on this committee, I've just seen so many issues that we've had to deal with where there was a lack of looking at healthcare as a system, and also lack of looking at healthcare as a system, and also not looking at the healthcare system as it interacts with other things. So I was thinking of Representative Norton's bill about autism coverage, and if we don't get people at best outcomes for certain things, it ends up costing us more in the K-12 system and then in human services as time goes on. And there have been countless examples where if we looked at everything as a system, not just in healthcare, but education and corrections and human services, I think we could figure out a smarter way to reduce cost to society as a whole. I don't know if this bill will eventually do that. I mean, we could be trading one faceless bureaucracy for another, or we could have the same silos that plague us now between the different things that we work on. And but I think it deserves a chance to be heard and have some numbers attached to it in the Finance Committee. And so I thank you for your attention, and I look forward to seeing what you find out.
Representative Gottwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly, just on the bill itself, we've talked many times here that the basis for health care reform is delivery of the right care at the right time in the right place and the right amount. And that's regardless of system, single payer, private sector, whatever. I'm trying to figure out where in your bill we have a skin in the game for the person themselves, to take care of themselves. We hear many times, I've held many health care reform town hall meetings in my district, and people keep asking, where is the incentive in any system for health care reform for people to take better care of themselves? There's language in here about medical homes. We eliminate copays and deductibles. There's some evidence that those have limited ability to get people to kind of buy into their own health care. But there is general agreement that people need to take better care of themselves and have some skin in the game, some motivation to partner with their health care providers so that they can achieve better health. Where is that supported in this?
Representative Bly.
Chair Thiessen and Representative Gottwell, thank you for your question. I think it's actually in the areas where we want to encourage education and prevent methods of prevention of bad health. And I agree with you that we do want to have folks take better care of themselves. I don't think that the copays and really the financial barriers that sometimes get put in place to people seeking health care actually causes them to get better health care. And, you know, this is not only in perhaps public health sectors, but, you know, as an example, I have a problem with my arteries getting clogged because I had a poor diet before. I went to a doctor, heart doctor, who said, you're all too old, or you're not old enough really for us to do the kind of surgery that we sometimes do with that. Why don't we try having you change your lifestyle and exercising more and eating better? And because we could do this surgery on you and you wouldn't change your way of life, and that would be far worse for you. Now, fortunately, I had a doctor who worked with me in that way, and I think that others may find that in the system. My hope is that through this kind of system, that practice could be spread more widely. People would be thinking of other ways to less costly, less interrupted, and kind of methods to improve healthcare, getting people to think about their behavior.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Bly, right now in the system we have primary and preventive care providers who I think would argue, if you had them here in body, would say, I work really hard to educate my patients about primary and preventive care, give them lots of information, give them lots of good ideas and suggestions for living healthier lives. I think the question was more to where is the incentive in this system? And again, we're talking about healthcare reform. If this is the best system, then how do we have any mechanism in here that encourages the patient to have some role in their own health, in achieving their own health? There are many studies, in fact, that show, and if you talk to a lot of doctors, they'll tell you the frustration of sharing with somebody, change your eating habit or you're going to die of arterial sclerosis, and having that person ignore that, which does not lead to better health or cost savings or anything else. So there's a sense that needs to be an integral part of any health care reform we do, and I'm not seeing it in here, so that's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
Yeah. And I, you know, I would say to that, I think that's going to be true in any system that we have, and the key there, as Representative Bly, I think, alluded to, and I think you said, there's limited effect of money on doing that. It really is going to be about providing education. It's going to be about paying for health care in a different way so the doctor actually can have those conversations that Representative Bly had with his doctor. We just don't pay, or with a nurse, or with whomever. We just don't have those incentives in our system, and that's true regardless of the direction we go, and I think this would actually give us a chance to move in that kind of payment reform. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to make a comment. Around the table here, we all have health insurance. We have a good plan up here. And on top of that, I made it. I'm to Medicare. I can breathe. I can take a deep breath. The folks that I represent back home, many of my friends and neighbors and relatives who opt out of their insurance because they can't afford it, have anxiety because they don't have it. They're waiting to get to Medicare. They're the 49, 52, and 50, 62-year-old people who are hoping to live long enough to get to Medicare. By that time, their disease processes have advanced. And as a nursing home nurse, I received those folks in the admissions room in my nursing home, and they were at the end stages of their about most disease processes. So I think that in order for people to know that, first of all, they can afford better care and not have to lose their home and farm to receive it, we need to have a plan like this going forward on the table, working out. This is not a perfect plan, and we all know that, but it's a step in the right direction. And I thank you, Representative Bly.
Okay. We really need to not do that. We have rules in the legislature against that. So thank you. Representative Loeffler, and then we're going to go. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bly and the other people in the room. I think we're at a time in which we know there's lots of problems with the current system, and we have to figure out how to get from here to something a lot better. And this, you know, seems a lot better in some places where it's implemented. I tend to be a fairly practical person, and so I would really challenge you and the other smart people here in this room to think through how do we, if we were to go this route, how do we get a transition plan? And right now there's a federal law that says states cannot touch 40% of the market in Minnesota, and we have a bunch of people on Medicare. And so without an act of Congress, which doesn't seem right now very open to giving it that, we'll see, you know, what would be the roadmap that we could make it work if we couldn't get 100% to begin with? And the other thing I would ask you to think about is the health planning regions. You have in this bill a role for regional analysis and thinking, and I continue to get disappointed when I see things that say the greater Minnesota will be divided into five areas and the seven-county metro will be one gigantic entity. It is not. It has over half the state's population. In Hennepin County alone, there's 25% of the state's population, but it has small-town rural communities where people farm. It has inner-city areas with absolutely horrendous health disparities. It has very wealthy communities with a certain expectations that are and different access to providers than other parts. And so I really would like, as you move forward, to really look at if the what is the purpose of the regions, and if it's to make sure that a community, however it's defined, feels like its needs are being met, then you got to go way far lower than the seven-county metro area to make that work for over half the population. And so I really would encourage you to work on those kind of things as this continues to move on so that people can see in all parts of the state something that can work and how do we transition to it.
Representative Black. Thank you for that comment. You're an analytical thinker, and I appreciate your asking us to consider that, and I will. I think you raised some very interesting and good points, so thank you.
President Gabo.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call and we move to a vote.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, any closing remarks, Representative Blair?
No, thanks.
Okay. Well, then, the clerk will... yes, Representative Lane renews her motion that the House File 135 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Yeah. The clerk will take the roll.
Thiessen.
Aye.
Abler.
No.
Broad. Bunn.
No.
Emmer. Fritz.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Gottwald.
No.
Hayden.
Aye.
Huntley.
Aye.
Kelly.
No.
Lane.
Aye.
Liebling.
Aye.
Loeffler.
Aye.
Mack.
No.
Murphy.
Aye.
Norton.
Pass.
Rood.
Aye.
Tao.
Yes.
Torkelson.
No.
There are 11 yeses and 6 noes. The motion prevails and the bill moves on. There we go. Well, thank you, Representative Bly, for your work. And thank you, members, for a really good discussion. I'd also like to thank everybody in the audience for coming out and caring so much about healthcare in this state and improving it. It really makes a difference. Thank you. And we're adjourned.